You're listening to The Running Ground with Joseph D. Welcome back. Thanks again for tuning in. Hope everyone's staying healthy, staying safe, and grinding. You know, whatever dream it is you're chasing, whatever goal it is you're pursuing, just keep grinding. And remember, mindset is everything. We're back with two episodes this week, and I really hope you enjoyed the last one with Tori Caves. Shout out to her for coming on. And it was just a nice way to kind of get back into the groove of podcasting. She was just really easy to talk to. And just made the comeback episode a lot more smoother. But during my little hiatus, I did a lot of running and really kind of locked in trying to improve on my own marathon. I signed up to run the Whistle Stop Marathon in Ashland, Wisconsin back in October, and I felt pretty well prepared going into it, and the goal was to break 3:25. I was happy with my training up to that point, did a lot of long runs in the dead of summer, and man, you know, this Houston heat was ridiculous this year. Is like insulting. I think we had 40 plus straight days of 100 plus degree temps in July and August. It was brutal, but nonetheless I grinded through all of it and knew that just with all, hopefully with all that humidity training, it would just pay dividends once I made it up north to Wisconsin, where, you know, humidity is not really a thing like it is down here. Running friends asked me how I ended up at Ashland, Wisconsin, of all the places. I knew I wanted to race somewhere at the end of September or early October, somewhere in between there. I definitely wanted it up north, just as a change of pace, and you know, it was still brutally hot here in Houston. And then I wanted something that had like a relatively like downhill with not too many hills and climbs and inclines, declines. And not to say that this was like an entirely downhill race. It was 600 feet from start to finish, and the majority of that was from mile 8 to 20. So 600 feet over the course of 12 miles, it really didn't feel like you were going downhill at all. It kind of just felt like a really flat course. But the scenery was just absolutely stunning. It was a smaller race, although it did pick up just because the Twin Cities Marathon canceled, I think, 2 weeks prior to, so a lot of people ran this one instead, just to kind of make up for the cancellation of that race. But it was a small race. It was put on by their local Chamber of Commerce. It was really cool. I would definitely go back and do it again. But the course was an old railroad track. It didn't run directly against Lake Superior, but you saw Lake Superior at some point. It was just a sight to see. But weather-wise, the weekend before my race, weather was beautiful. Weather after my race, beautiful. Of course, the weekend I'm there, it's like 15 to 20 mile per hour side wind, headwind, chill factor made 46 degrees feel like 36 degrees, and it was just a steady rain through most of the race. It wasn't like full-on downpour, but it was like drizzle, rain, sprinkle, drizzle, rain, sprinkle, and then it stopped and then picked back up. Like I said, the course itself was an old railroad track, so it ended up being like a trail race, but it wasn't like a true trail race. There wasn't, you know, tree roots, you're not going up these hills and whatnot. It was, they literally just picked up the railroad tracks and smoothed it out. So it's not, I don't consider it like a trail race, just because it just wasn't a trail race to me. But I will say that the rain definitely made the ground definitely muddy and slick. Couldn't really get a great grip, and it was just hard to kind of go fast without your foot getting stuck in some of the mud sometimes, or, you know, slick enough to where your foot didn't get good traction. But you know, it was a great experience overall. Just never forget like the look of running through all these trees and beautiful scenery, and out in the, it's almost like a countryside. At the end of the day, I didn't hit my goal of a 3:25, but I did walk away with a PR of 3:30, which I will take. But I am going to try for that 3:25 at Chevron Houston in January, and hopefully the weather conditions will be better. We'll see. But I'm staying focused, and that 3:25 is coming down eventually. As always, if you like the content, please share us with your friends and follow us on Instagram at the.grind.effect. For brand apparel and actually new designs, you can go to our website at thegrindeffect.net. And if you could all do me a favor and rate the podcast, do a quick review. It just helps me with whatever algorithm these platforms use and really just helps me in the show out. But thank you to all the followers and subscribers. Your support definitely means a lot. And I hope to keep doing this, putting out these episodes. today we link back up with my man, Corey Joyner, who we had on 2 years ago, and we just kind of catch up on his run journey for the past, what's been going on for the past 2 years. You know, back then, he was residing in Florida and shooting for a sub-3 marathon, and now he's on the opposite coast living in SoCal and just living that sub-3 life. I think he's hit it a couple times. He and I actually got to meet up at the Chevron Houston Marathon back in 2022, where I believe that was the first time he broke 3 hours. And, you know, he's done that several times to where I'm pretty sure he could just go out there and sub-3 easy, to be honest. I mean, he's locked in. He's locked in on that training. He's nailed his training, and he's just what I would consider an elite runner at this point. But how he is on these episodes, that's exactly how he is in real life. Just a genuine, funny dude trying to challenge himself and inspire others to do the same at the same time. But let's sit back and let's run it back with Corey Joyner.
Welcome to The Running Grind, a podcast dedicated to finding the story behind your journey. Presented by The Grind Effect. It's a lifestyle. It's a state of mind. It's a reminder that success, your success, doesn't always come easy. And here's your host, Joseph D.
Pretty much recap what's been going on with you since the last time we spoke, which was
2 years ago.
So yeah, 2 years ago. And
I was listening back. I was like, wow, this was times have changed.
I can't remember if you had already hit sub-3 or you were still working.
No, no, I had just came off. Wow, this chair almost died. I had just finished doing Space Ghost. It was late winter, spring when we talked. Yeah. So I had just finished Space Ghost and I had just started with my, I still have the same coach, but I had just started with him when we were talking.
Yeah. Yep. We got to link up at Chevron. So we'll talk about that. Your first,
yeah, which is crazy too.
Yeah. Your first marathon was like a 4 hour something, right?
501 actually.
501. I mean, we're going to talk about that too. And just kind of recap what your run journey was like up until now, where you're just like demolishing this, like, sub-3 easy, man. I'm still trying to figure things out with the marathon.
But man, it's really a puzzle, you know? It's a puzzle to figure out how you can get your body to be efficient and, you know, still give that output that you wanted late in the race. That's really the game. It's absolutely, just in that last 10K, how can I stay at least on pace or not fall apart in that last 10K?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick your brain on that too, because
yeah, for sure.
Because yeah, I don't even think I'm going out too hot, but I can't, I'm not made for the even pace. I'm never negative split a race. So this year I'm going to try to like negative split, even if it means I have to go like slower in the beginning where I'm just cruising for that first half. And then
it's a game of patience too. Because you know, you got to start out a little bit more conservative. I would always recommend starting out a little bit more conservative, especially early on, just letting your body warm up and get into the groove. It's literally like, because you're not really doing a full warm up, it's like that first 5-10K is your warm up, and then pretty much after that 10K mark, you're really like, all right, I'm close or actually at goal pace, and then you just got to hold. And then once, you know, each step, you're increasing the intensity because it's getting harder and it's going to take more effort to hold the pace. And then if you're feeling good at mile 20, you survive the dead miles of like 15 through 19 and you get to 20 and you feel good. It's like, all right, now we get to play.
Your coasting pace is probably like my all out pace. All right, man. But, you know, it's good to have you back. It's been obviously, I think, 2 years ago, we said, since the last time we chatted. A lot has happened in 2 years in your personal life. And with the podcast, I'm coming off like a 6, 7, 9, 8 month hiatus. So trying to get back into the groove with people that I've chatted with before and just playing a little bit of catch up in their lives. But man, tell me what's going on. I know you're no longer in Florida. What brought you to the opposite side of the USA?
Yeah, you know, Cali was always in my sights of where I wanted to be post graduate school. And then it finally happened. I was able to secure a job that, you know, helped me get out here and get me to the Southern California. So I'm grateful for that opportunity. So I've been out here a little over a year and a half now, and I absolutely love it. It's, you know, it's sunny like Florida, but you know, there's no afternoon thunderstorms like Florida. There's no hurricane. Well, there kind of was a storm that came this year. They blamed me, but it wasn't my fault. But
was it called Hurricane Corey? Or?
I know, right? I forget the hurricane name, but by the time it gets to SoCal, it's like a tropical depression. It comes up from the Pacific of Mexico.
That's right. There were a couple that hit Southern California, right?
Yeah, which is crazy. But it's been a great ride so far, man. California has everything, bro. There's the mountains, there's the beaches, there's the desert. You can go to national forest. Everything is here.
So you were born and raised in Florida, right? What was the hardest part about leaving everything you've known from back home?
I think just that convenience, because everything, like all my family, majority of like 90% of my family is in Florida. They're in Central Florida. I have some family a little bit in the northern part of Florida. But for the most part, it was just that convenience and having family there. But for me, it was just time to branch out, because even with going to college and undergrad at the U, that was still a 4-hour drive back home. So for me, it's like making that cross-country trip, going to a new state. You know, I knew people out here. One of my best friends lived out here, and I still had some connections, but it was still like, wow, it's a big change up, because I just can't drive 4 hours and, you know, go home for a stint. I have to catch a flight, a 5-hour flight across the entire country. But yeah, it's been absolutely a dream. I'm excited for this next chapter of my Southern California life. And it's been good.
Did you get settled in pretty quickly, just like meeting new people, meeting run clubs out there?
Listen, the run community will get you connected. If you are outgoing and you just reach out to people, man, people are willing to help and meet. And it's so many running clubs here in LA and SoCal. Like you can find your tribe. That's one of the beautiful things about being out here. And it's so unique, because even in Florida, it's not run clubs like how run clubs are here in LA and SoCal. Like every neighborhood has a run club, feels like, which is so dope. And it's so unique about the culture of running that's out here. You know, you have clubs that is fun running. You got clubs, they're serious about performance. You got clubs that they're like sponsored and they're out there really competing and everything. So it's such a dope and unique scene that it's pretty eye-opening too, to see it and to be a part of it.
So just the name drop, what's the run club that you're linked up with at the moment?
Yeah, so it's weird because I don't live in LA. I live in Irvine, which is Orange County. And so there's a couple run clubs there, but most of the time I really just run from the house. I still do a lot of runs solo. But I do try to go to different run clubs when I have the opportunity. So when I'm up in LA, I'll link up with Black Men Run LA. I'll link up with Keep It Run 100. That's here. Good Vibes Track Club. I haven't ran with like Koreatown or some of the other ones. I've been to some of their events, but I haven't had the chance to like run with them or anything yet. Like for me, it's just so easy. Like living in Irvine, everything is connected. There's bike paths everywhere. I can literally just catch a bike path and go do a 20-mile workout uninterrupted almost, like in Irvine, which is absolutely nuts. So it just makes it easy for me to do so. But
in Houston.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. But connecting with so many different people, especially people you follow for a while. You see, you know, their posts and, you know, their story working with their run community club. It's really cool that, you know, you just a DM away like, hey, you know, when's the next meetup? I want to come out to y'all group's meetup.
That's awesome. Do you still keep in touch with a lot of the folks from back in Florida?
Run club? Like, yeah, run folks?
Yeah. Just yeah. You're a part of?
Yeah, I still see, you know, they're all doing great things. Back home in Florida, and you know, steady chasing PRs and you know, chasing dreams too. So it's really cool to see. It's so great with all the technology, just follow on Strava, Instagram, and just keeping tabs on them and just cheering them on from afar. And then the great thing too is most times races you go to, they're coming out to the races. Someone will be out there too, and then we can catch up then.
That's awesome, man. So I think, you know, the first time we spoke, you were trying to catch sub three.
Yeah.
It was 2 years. Not only have you caught it, but it's like a consistent thing, just sub three from all the posts that I see you doing, just from all the races that I see you doing. So I'm going to, for people who haven't like listened to our initial episode, definitely go back and check it out. But, you know, when you first started marathon training or just even running in general, I think your first marathon was like a just about 5 hours, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that first one, man, like I went back and listened to the old episode. It's just like a blast from the past. And like, just listen to an older version of yourself. It was like so dope because it's like, wow, that's, you know, where I was at that time. And I was coming off a big PR at Space Ghost. That was my third marathon. And it, you know, it was so cool just to hear where my mindset was and how, you know, things have changed since then. But going back to your point, yeah, the first marathon, it was 5 hours. It was the Disney Marathon in 2019 at Disney, because it's just such an entertaining race. You're running through the theme parks. There's opportunities to take pictures with different characters and their big draw. It's like you don't see those characters in the parks on the regulars. Like I'm going to Disney on the regular, because I was not. But I'm like, oh, yeah, let me go take some pictures and just really enjoy this marathon and just be in the moment. Because, you know, at the end of the day, 26.2 miles is a long way. And just crossing that finish line for the first time, you know, definitely got the feels. You just feel so accomplished after doing so. And the bug really just hit me. It was like, okay, I did it. I was able to conquer the distance. How fast can we go? And that, you know, led to, you know, the next race.
And, up to that point?
Up to that point at Disney?
I mean, you're brand new to running, brand new to marathon.
Yeah, I'm new.
You know, was it something where you just found a plan off of like the internet?
Oh yeah, definitely found Hal Higdon. I went and bought the book. I was like, I'm reading Hal Higdon. This is the plan. This is everybody. I'm like, everybody gets Hal Higdon. Like that's all I know. So I'm following the plan. And with that plan, it all showed runs each day. And with those runs, it really didn't have like a sprint portion component to it. And it really didn't have what will really assist you in going to the next level is that polarized training and that, you know, that coaching aspect that I have now that really helps you get to the next level. But what it did do for me and what I learned following that plan is that I can follow a plan and I can be consistent. And that was the biggest boost for me because I was doing so many different other health and wellness activities from CrossFit, boxing, and just different workout plans. And I was like, all right, I want to be consistent with something. And so just following that plan for 4 months, it was like a 16-week plan. And to follow that plan and to, you know, see it come to fruition that I was able to finish the marathon, you know, that was a really big personal win for me at that time.
I think that's one of the hardest things as like a new runner is to stick to the plan. It's so easy to deviate, especially if you get behind on one of the weeks or you didn't get that long run in or you didn't hit that mark that distance you're supposed to get, and then it just falls off, and before you know it, you get behind, and it's like, yep. Well, switch to the half marathon instead of stick with the full. But to have that discipline to stick with the plan on your very first go around, that, I mean, it definitely speaks volume for the type of person you are. And
oh yeah, you know what was crazy? Because I documented it too. So like, this was a time when I first started learning about, you know, actually there's a run community on Instagram of people sharing their runs and doing daily posts and sharing race recaps. And so that's when I ended up creating the Instagram running account, because I still have like a personal account, but the running account has literally taken over. You know, that's just how it goes. But so that helped me keep myself accountable because I'm posting regularly. People are encouraging. And then like I'm getting family members that's, you know, they're not, you know, commenting or, you know, engaging, but they see the post. They're like, yeah, I'm just trying to see if you actually going to do it. So, you know, keep it up. So you get those different messages from from folks, and it, you know, it keeps you going a little bit. It energizes you, like, oh, I got to keep going. People are watching.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people are starting to, like, you know, almost get inspired by you, or, you know, kind of follow your story. So it's like, well, I gotta hold up my end of the bargain.
Oh yeah. I'll say this. If anybody's listening to the pod, that, you know, put your story out there. Everybody's story and journey is unique, and you don't know who is going to be inspired by your journey. And you're, you know, trying to be better, not only in running or whatever health and fitness endeavor you go after. I was doing a blog a little bit at that time, so I was just trying to find my social medium that I wanted to put out, you know, more information. And so I had put out a couple blog write-ups, and like months later, I got a random message, because people can write a comment message and it'll go to your email, and they hit me with the message on there that's like, oh, I just read your blog about your experience at the Miami Marathon. I'm just so inspired by, you know, your journey and how, you know, you're able to just recap this experience. And I've been through like a similar thing, and I'm just motivated. I was just like, wow, you know, it's like months later. But that's the kind of impact that, you know, once you put it out there, it's going to resonate with somebody. And that somebody, that just might be what they need to take that next step and getting themselves motivated and getting themselves out there.
I love following your story and your journey, especially when you throw out the Jerry Curl and you got the spray going. I think it's one of the funniest parts when you start posting that stuff, just because it shows a lot of your like personality, right? You really can't.
Yeah.
When you're running, obviously you have the toe tap at the finish line, which, you know, is a nice little teaser of what your personality is like. But when you get to throw on the Jerry Curl and the spray, and you always have me on the podcast, man, like your personality is very much it's relatable for a lot of people, and I think it just makes people more just kind of, you know, relate to you a lot better than, you know, some of the other accounts. Not to take anything away from them, it's just that, you know, everybody brings something different to the table, but I think you have a very solid approach that makes people want to like gravitate towards, you know, the story you're putting out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm you know, I'm just trying to be myself out there and just have fun with it. I think that's, you know, most important. A lot of times, especially when you first start out, your competitive side comes out, and unless you hit a goal time, it's like it's a failure. It's not a win for you. And then post be like, oh, I ran this race, but this, but that. No, man, just enjoy the journey, enjoy the race. No race is ever going to be perfect. You know, there's going to be, you know, races that you're going to hit the time that you set out to hit. There's going to be races where you don't. It's just part of the game. So you just have to, you know, love the success and the many failures that will come with it. But it just makes the success, and once you do hit those goals, that much sweeter in the end.
Exactly, man. I always tell people, like, you know, people who, obviously in my little running community, who don't hit their goals, I'm like, man, just celebrate every finish line. I mean, first of all, just be grateful you get to cross the finish line. But good race, something you can learn. Bad race, there's something you can learn. There's always something you can just take away from each race, but still celebrate every finish line you're able to cross.
You have to, and there's always a win in every race, even if the race completely, you know, went downhill for you. There's always a win in there somewhere. There's something you can take away. Like, even in my worst marathons, there was, you know, something I took away from those races that helped propel me, you know, to being, you know, in the position I am now, where I was able to, in, you know, that time span, qualify for Boston, and then, you know, run qualifying times for other races. So it's more to it than just, you know, going after setting that goal time and hitting it on the first try. It's like so much you're going to learn, not only about the sport, but most importantly about yourself.
For sure. All right. Well, you know, you start off at 501. How many marathons have you ran at this point now?
At this point, which is crazy. At that point, when we first talked, it was 3. Now I'm at 9.
And what's the current PR?
Current PR is 252.
252. So my man went from 501 to a 252. How long did it take you to break through that? I mean, obviously the 501 was like your first go at it. I'm sure this one, your training was completely different, and you got linked up with the coach. Tell me how those numbers just started dropping. Like, what kind of numbers were we looking at from you know, I don't know if you know, remember every single time, but just, you know, like the 4 hour, the 3 hour, the 2 hour.
Yeah, I remember all of them. I mean, marathons, you know, it's such a big thing. You know, you train for months for it, and each marathon, for me personally, like each marathon is its own story, its own chapter in a book in itself. So from that 501, the next marathon was a 429 at Miami. And from that marathon, I ended up doing Space Coast. And then that's when I went from the 429 to a 318 at Space Coast. And
it's an hour and what is that? Hour and 20 minutes almost?
It's an hour, almost an hour 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So going, you know, from 429 to 318, you know, that was just a big jump, but just everything came together that day. It's really three big things that, you know, when I'm, you know, teaching others about the marathon, trying to find success is that, you know, you want to, you know, nail your pacing, you want to nail your nutrition. And then on top of those two, once you nail pacing and nutrition, you know, you just got to find really what's going to get you to, you know, push through when it gets hard. it's going to get hard.
That's where I'm still trying to work at.
Yeah, it's going to get hard. It gets hard for everybody, no matter your pace. Like I went out and ran a marathon easy and it was still hard in the last 10K. I'm just running easy. It's still hard no matter what. But for that jump, things just clicked. And then from there, that's when I realized, okay, it's possible. Because, you know, to qualify for Boston, if you're under 35 as a male, you got to go under 3 hours. And with cutoff times, which was insane this year, you got to go like well under 3 hours. So that's when I hired a coach. So after that third marathon, I ended up hiring a coach. And so the next race I didn't do until a year later, I did the Indianapolis Monumental Marathon. And for that one, I went from 318 to 315. I was on pace for a 255 as the training, you know, I had some hiccups in training, but I felt like where I progressed in the year that I was able to hit that BQ standard. But at the end of the day, there's the nutrition aspect. You got to make sure you're doing what you can do to give yourselves the best opportunity. In that race, I did not take salt tablets, which I take for every race religiously now, to help fight off cramps. And so did not break three that day, but I did BQ. I mean, not BQ, but I did PR, which was a fight in itself. So you from know, that one, I that,
you're, you know, you have a goal, yeah, of, you know, 255, and you quickly find out that you're not going to hit that. What is your mental state? Because I think a lot of, not so much new runners, but people who are just trying to hit the goal, like as soon as they find out they're not on that pace, their drive just, you know, mentally,
yeah,
down, and then they just start kind of, you know, like, you know, being their own worst enemy. But what was your mentality going into that when you're knowing that, all right, it's not going to happen today?
Yeah, you know, kinda, you know, it sucks, to be honest. And you know, it sucks. I try and give a quick race, review of what happened. So in that race, everything was going smooth up until about the 10-mile mark. And then at that moment, I started noticing, because you feel like a sensation that a cramp is coming on. I kind of felt the sensation. I was like, this is way too early for this. Way too early for this. So I'm just like, all right, let's just keep going after it. We'll slow down slightly. We'll, you know, hopefully the sensation goes away. I got to the halfway mark and I almost caught a cramp at halfway, but like a couple miles later, it hit. And so I slowed up, stretched it out a little bit, but unfortunately it just became run walk from there on out. And in that moment, you know, it's literally, you just have to accept that, unfortunately with the cramp, unless you like, a robot can run through a cramp at pace, which most people cannot. it was like, okay, how can we make the best of this situation? Because the way I typically just try to look at it, I'm out there anyway. I'm a part of the race still. Like, how can we make the most of the situation that just happened? So I was looking at my watch. I had it set on estimated finish time, which is able to, you know, based on my pace, if I was to keep up with it, what time would I finish? So unfortunately, I'm just seeing it go from 255, 258, 302, 310. I was like, okay, can we still PR? So the game just kept evolving for me. And so I was like, I think I can still PR if I just keep moving forward when I can and just walking and quick stretch. I think I can still PR. Fortunately, I was still able to PR by a little under 3 minutes, which was, you know, a huge, like, wow. Like, even through all that adversity, I still was able to get a huge win in this race. But I also know I truly felt like if I didn't cramp, I was going to break through that day.
Yeah.
So,
and I left a lot of time on the course.
So much time. But it also let me know, like, you are, you know, for me, it's like, man, that's just resilience, you know, and strength, you know, to push through and continue to keep moving through, you know, cramps and legs locking up. So, you know, whenever it got hard again, building for Houston, that was next. And, you know, going right into the build for Houston, taking like a down weekend and going right into that build and getting ready for it. Cause I wasn't supposed to run the full in Houston. I was registered for the half marathon. I wasn't supposed to run the full.
So what was the time span between Indianapolis and Houston?
The what?
What was the time span between Indianapolis and Houston? Was it just a couple months or?
I think it was like 10 weeks. Wow. I think it was like 10 or 11 weeks. But typically my coach and the way we build out the marathon plan, it's a 12-week plan. But since with that race, half the race I'm run walking, trying to compete. So I was sore because of all the cramps, but I wasn't like destroyed from that race.
Yeah.
So we were able to like, all right, we got the fitness. You're coming out this healthy. We'll take a down week. Then let's get back into it and get you ready. Cause Houston is going to be a fast course opportunity for you to have a really good time and to qualify. So just go out there and let's go get it.
And Houston was the place where you and I actually got to link up a couple times.
Yep.
The expo, and then immediately after the race. And you're right, you know, when you finally get to meet some of these QBC on social media, it's like, man, you really are a real person,
right?
they're just as cool as in person as they are like on social media. So I thought that was a pretty sweet deal. You were up there with your run club because y'all rolled deep.
We were like 20 plus deep for Houston. That's why I was signed up for the half, because I was like, I'm not missing the team field trip. I'm going to Houston. I'm coming to Houston. Not missing the team field trip. We had did one to, I think, that earlier that the year before to at Grandma's. I couldn't do that one. I was coming off an injury, and I didn't want to run a marathon in the summer. So I was like, nah, coach, I'm not coming up to do Grandma's. And then before that, during COVID, it was a race in Mississippi that was still put on. And it's just, you know, that team camaraderie, so many people had great success at both races. I was like, I can't miss out. I gotta, you know, come out with the team and try and get some of that magic.
For sure. So you're heading into Houston. You're obviously going to restart you already have the fitness there. You're reorganizing, refocusing on breaking this sub three. How'd you feel going into Houston?
Yeah, that was the best training block that I've, you know, done. Going into it, you know, even though it was a little shorter, but I was, you know, locked in. Like I was laser focused. I knew it was, you know, a chance to get it done, and everything about the training leading up to Houston just went pretty much perfect. Usually it's not, but everything just went pretty smooth leading up to it, and just was locked in, and I had all the confidence in the world that with, you know, following the plan, and we had the whole crew out there. If we execute, it's gonna happen.
You know, we were also blessed with amazing weather that day because it was super cold. It was actually supposed to be a lot colder. Whereas this past year, oh man, it was like 57 at the beginning and 60 by like 9 o'clock.
Ugh.
90% humidity. It was horrible. It was like, it was very grueling. Like, so
you know, what was crazy? What was crazy about that year too is we did get super lucky, but also the day before and leading up to that morning, there was a wind advisory. It was like gusts in like the 30s and 40s.
Yeah. I remember the week of, people were thinking about, you know, just not running because it was supposed to be
right.
Oh, 32 degrees plus the wind chill was supposed to make it feel like 20. And I knew a lot of people were thinking about not running. I was like, there's absolutely no way I'm not running this.
Yeah, it was crazy. Weather watching was a real every day. What's the weather? What's the weather going to be? What's the weather? Please, please, brother, come through. We just needed to come through, but it all worked out.
This was the first race where you broke sub three, right?
Mm-hmm.
So take me through this. So from the start, what's our pace looking like? Is it something where you even pace it? Do you negative split it?
Negative split. So it was negative split. Typically, I try to do it in first 5K warm up into it. Don't go out too hard. After that, really just start to
not go out too hard pace.
Yeah, don't go out too hard.
What was that? What was your not go too hard pace?
It was It'd
be my race pace watch. He's gonna say
I want to say I started out at like in the 650s, in the six high six. Yeah, I think I started out in the 650s and then the high 640s. For it. And then from there, I just slowly bring it down to where through the training, my race pace would most likely be at and where the effort would need to be.
So when you're cruising through after your first 5K, you start off at like a 645, 640-ish. What are we mm-hmm. into the actual like race pace?
I think for it, I wanted to average 635 to 640 for the race. I'm actually going to pull it up now.
Yeah.
But I think that was like the sweet spot. Yep, here we go. January 16th, 2022. Houston Marathon.
You know you're a dedicated runner when you can pull up the date real quick and like, I'm actually going to pull this up. Hold on. Let me pull this up.
Yeah, I had to search it real quick. You know, I could just pull up the name and it came right up on Strava.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started out actually 6:59. First mile was a 6:59. And yes, through the training, it's really a good idea too. So say you're doing like a tempo at race pace. Don't start that tempo at race pace. Start that tempo where you want to start the race. A little slower than tempo, and then after like a mile or two, get into the race pace you're looking to do. And then if you got the juice at the last 2 miles or so, depending on how long your tempo is, just try to speed up a little bit, just simulating how you would, you know, want the race to actually go. But with these splits, I was in like the 650s and 640s for the first 10K. And then I dropped into the 630s. Yep, 630s. And I just was like, all right, let's just hold in the 630s.
How about that last stretch? Because, you know, if there's anything about that Houston course, the last mile 20 to 23, it's rolling hills.
It sure was.
Yeah.
I didn't forget that. But
I mean, Houston, were you still cruising at your 630 pace, or was your legs fatiguing at all?
Now, so what ended up happening was like Houston was great. Like it was solid, you know, from a course standpoint and the crowd that was out there, got some really good energy. And once I got to 20, I think we're going like through a neighborhood, like a main road, but it was like a neighborhood before we got to where they were building the tunnels, which was at 20. But once I got there, like I started. Like you just get a really good feeling. Like I got a really good feeling. We got to 20 and I was just like, yeah, we can do this today. Yeah. Like we got it today. We got the juice. We just got to hold up, but we can do it. I'm like, don't get too ahead of yourself. So I had to reel myself back in because at 20, I was really excited. And so I was like, let me reel it back in. Let's just focus, lock in. You're 10K away from making it happen. And then, so I was cruising through the 630, so I was just holding. I was like, all right, let's just hold. We got to increase the effort. We got energy to increase the effort, so just hold. And with that race too, one of the things, because I had saw one of the somebody on Instagram post that, you know, dedicate miles to people. So I was like, from 20 on, I was dedicating miles, you know, to different people, family, friends that was supporting. So I was just, you know, just trying to keep myself distracted and to, you know, just stay locked in on making it happen. And those rollers for sure was like, who wanted to put these at the end of the race?
Right. I'm like, can we run this course backwards so we hit those rollers at the very beginning and not so much at the
end? Right. But it's like you come this far and it's like you didn't come this far just to come this far. So you just find a way to do it. And it's more crowd too. Like there's people in the median and there's, you know, a lot of energy going through that last stretch, which is great, especially in the last 5K. And I know there was like a pacer that was a 3-hour pacer, but from my watch, because, you know, you don't always get to start with the same corral with the pace. I was like, nah, I'm on pace for at least 3 minutes under under 3 hours. There's no way. But yeah, I was just like, just keep moving.
When you see the finish line and you know you're about to hit your goal of sub three, I mean, just to be able to hit that goal of that you've been chasing for what, maybe a full year. What's that feeling like? Especially as you really approach that finish line, you're looking down at your watch and you're like, holy man, holy crap, this is about to happen.
It was amazing, man. Like it was such a, you know, surreal feeling to, you know, all the hard work really, you know, it paid off, you know. When you really lock into the grind, training for a marathon and the work that you do have to put in to, you know, hit these goals that, you know, it takes a while sometimes to hit. You know, everybody's not fully like gifted to hit it on the first try. You know, sometimes it's gonna take some time. And you just think about all the, you know, the early mornings, you know, the hard workouts, the sacrifices, because you can't go to everything. You gotta go train. You gotta get up, you gotta go train, or you gotta work out that evening. There's sacrifices that do happen, and you just are just really happy that, you know, everything that you've done, it leads to that moment, and in that moment, like you accomplish it. And, you know, it was a pour of emotions at the finish line in Houston. It was just like, wow, like, I did it. At one point, it was like, I thought it was incredibly wild that people could run for 6:50 a mile for 26 miles. Like, this is insane. And then to go from there, it's like, I actually was able to be one of these insane people. I was able to do it.
So what was your finish time for that race?
Finish time for that was 2:56.
2:56. Yeah, I remember seeing you pretty much well after the race, because I was waiting for some other people to finish and we ran into each other outside of the convention center. And man, you were just telling me what you had. And I was like, well, at least one of us did. No, I had a good race. It was my very first marathon. I was really proud of the way I did. I did not have the juice the last 10K, but I was the whole experience of experiencing your first marathon is really cool.
And then
I mean, it's goals and stuff like that.
It's a trip, right? Because like you don't fully know what to expect until you're in it. Like you can hear all the stories, like, oh yeah, all right, you're gonna do the first 10 miles, the next 10 miles, the last 20, that's when it really begins. It's gonna be hard. You're like, all right, how hard can it be? And then you get out there like, oh.
I remember being like, what is this wall you speak of? I ain't feeling no wall. And then mile 19 hits, I'm like, oh, this is, we're at the wall.
If the wall hits, oh, man, it hits, man. Yeah. I try to avoid that at all costs, but it happens.
Oh, yeah, it's still happening to me. I'm still trying to crack the code on my marathon, you know, races myself, but, you know, just to be able to pick people's brains like yourself, it's always like I always consider it a blessing, because you can just learn and pull so much, you know, information from all these different runners who've achieved what you're trying to do. And that goes back to, you know, you kind of being like a social media, like, inspiration to a lot of people, and seeing if you can do it, then it's like, well, you know, I should be able to technically do it too. I just got to find my way of, you know,
It's a formula, and it's just, you know, finding what truly works for you as far as, you know, sticking to the plan consistently. Once you can do that, and then you find what nutrition will work best for you out there on the course, it's totally doable. It's totally doable for sure.
So from 256 down to 252, what was that timeline? Like your next marathon, were you able to beat that 256, or did you go back up a little bit and then finally get past another barrier?
Yeah, so after Houston, the next race I had, because I had deferred LA, so I did LA, and that was the fun run, and that's when the Jerry Curl was born for racing. And so for that one, I didn't race it at all. I think I ran a 3:30 for it, and you know, that's an incredible time in itself, because even still, like, I'm out there just having a ball, and I'm, you know, still able to run almost a sub 3:30 and walked like a lot of the back half, like that last couple miles. So
it must be nice. I don't know what that feels like. Well, I know what walking feels like, but
but it was totally a different experience from a marathon, like, running perspective, because most of the time we're running out here, we're training so hard to go do and hit a PR, but to go into a race completely zero pressure and just having absolute fun for the marathon, it literally changed my perspective on marathons from there. And also just being out in LA, like, I found out I was moving out here during that weekend, but just to see the first time actually seeing the LA run culture and how many different clubs are out there, and you know, they're, you know, just supporting all the runners and one another, I was like, wow, this is going to be so dope. I'm ready to move out here. Like, I don't even want to fly back. Just let me stay. But I had to fly back, get my stuff, and then come back.
Yeah. And then you've already made your way to Boston, correct?
Yeah. So after that, I was able to defer Chicago. So Chicago was supposed to be the 2020 race, but ended up becoming Space Ghost. And so I ended up deferring it to that following, because I didn't want to do it the first year that it came back. That first year, I just felt like it wasn't going to be like the same effect. Which was a great decision, because it was a hot race that year. The first year they brought it back. Yes, yeah, so I was like, whoop, dodged the bullet there. So I was able to defer to 2022. And even though, because I was coming through, you know, moving out to Cali, and I was coming off a little injury again. So it was like, I was like, I don't know what's going to happen with this training block, but we'll see. And then the training block has started to go well. Like, I started to, you know, really get back into a groove with the training, and then kind of like the last 3 weeks kind of fell apart a little bit. I was like, man, I don't know what was gonna happen. But it's a world major. It's my first world major I was able to run, and I read on Run for PRs, not Run for PRs, it was A to Z Running. Andy, she wrote on there, just, you know, run by feel, like, your GPS not gonna be working anyway. So literally just run by feel and then just see what happens. And that's literally what I did. And I just enjoyed the whole race. And as I was running, I was clipping and I was clipping good times. And I was just like, all right, well, looks like we go PR today. Let's see how far we can go.
And your time for that was what?
And that was the 252.
252. Gosh.
Yep.
Man, so obviously, do you have another goal past the 252? Is there a certain number you have in mind, like, where you eventually want to get to, or? Is it like,
yeah. So after doing Boston this past year, and which was so dope, because, and if we want to talk about it, we'll get into to Boston experience too. But I, you know, with consistently training, I've been able to, you know, knock down three sub 3 hour marathons. So I've been able to, like, Boston qualify three times. So I did in Houston, Chicago, and that, you know, sub 3 in Boston too. And so with that, it's just like, you know, the power, consistency, and just elevating your fitness level. So now for me, I do want a PR, and I thought I was going to PR in Boston, but, you know, that's what we'll talk about the story right there. But I do want to get under 250, and I have a marathon coming up in Hawaii, but I'm kind of injured right now, just came out of nowhere, so we'll see what happens. But I also got into Tokyo. And so Tokyo will be the A race now.
Yeah.
So Tokyo will be the A race.
Tokyo. So you did Chicago. You did Boston. This is going to be your third one. There's only three more to go after that.
Yeah, so I have three stars. And so with the big goal, running Boston was a huge goal, right? Qualifying, then running Boston. That was a huge goal and, you know, just running journey. And so now is to get the six stars. Well, probably going to be seven by the time I get close to finishing. So get all the stars, like collecting the Dragon Balls or something. You know, the stars. But I do want to run all the majors under 3 hours. So once I do it all in the goal, I want to run all the majors under 3 hours. So that is my goal right now.
That's amazing. Yeah, but let's talk about here about Boston, because obviously that's like the big one that everyone glamours to qualify for. You've done it three times. Like, yeah. You finally ran it this past year, right?
Yeah, finally ran it. You know, shout out to No Cutoff Time. I didn't have a cutoff time, but you know, the year I applied, I was like, yes, no cutoff. It was pretty brutal for folks this year, with it being over almost 6 minutes, I want to say, with the cutoff.
God, it was 6 minutes.
Yeah, it was over five.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So if yep. there was this qualifying time, would you have made that cut?
I would have just made it with my Boston time, with the 2:54 I ran by, barely, by like 20 seconds.
And like, man, not only did I break sub three, but I got it by like 3 minutes. And now you're telling me I still can't run because I didn't hit the five, almost 6 minute like buffer. That's so wild to me.
It's so crazy. I think, but with the buffer time coming back, it brings back that, oh, you know, it means a little bit more now, you know, when you do, you know, get that qualifying time. Like, it's not new that there's a cutoff time for Boston. So it's not, you know, a lot of people got into the running community and, you know, just really getting started and trying to qualify. So they didn't get to experience the Boston cutoff time, you know, and Boston cutoff time day, you know, the past couple of years. But, you know, that's definitely been a thing. And so, but when you finally do and you make the cutoff tie, it just makes it sweet. And that's what makes people, you know, really want to chase it. I feel like chase after, like it's something like you really have to go, you know, go earn and to go get in. And what makes it unique.
I'm going to earn my box.
Securing that.
By aging into it. Cause I don't know if I'll ever hit the goal time. So I'm hopefully I'll be like the only like 60 year old, like still running it.
Nah, you're not too far away, bro. You're not too far away.
That's my end goal. I just want to be able to.
You don't have to wait till 60. You don't have to be tired and wait till 60. Like, you're not that far away.
All right, I'm gonna hold you to that. I gotta put in the work because you put me on that. So if there's one thing I heard about Boston, it's one, how not only is it a spectacular race, but one, two, like it's expensive. It's it's a very expensive.
Yeah. Trip. Yeah, it definitely run your pockets. So it's gonna be an experience that you're gonna pay for, but it you know, it lives up to the hype. That, you know, it's a race. Everybody's fast out there, pretty much. Like, there's everybody that qualified, and then there's people that's running for charity and different businesses, which is absolutely amazing and inspiring. But for the most part, if you're in your corral where you qualify for, everybody's fast. Everybody's running your speed or faster. It feels like. And so it was so cool because you meet up with so many different people that, well, for me, from my experience, so many people that I followed their journey and got inspiration from, that they've qualified for Boston or got their six stars. And, you know, they've been running Boston multiple times. And it's just like, wow, now I'm running the race with you and meeting up with you and sharing some miles and other people that's getting their story, people I haven't met until getting out there. To Boston. So it was so cool to just have that full experience, and you hear about the stories, and if you read recaps, it's like, all right, you get to Boston, you got to go down, I think it's Newberry Street, I forget what the street, I think it's Newberry, and it's like, you know, all the different shops and the different stores, and then you're seeing everybody on that street, and then you get to race day morning, you got to catch the bus, and you got to catch not only a bus, you got to catch the school bus to get to Athletes Village, which is just like a school, like the schoolyard. You're just waiting out there in Athletes Village for your time to go, you know, line up, and you have to walk like over half a mile to the start, which is crazy. to start the race. Yeah, and it's a late start time, so you got to snack all morning. So you can't, you're not eating a heavy breakfast. You're snacking all morning. You know, you sipping your electrolytes a little bit, not too much. You know, so it don't mess up your stomach or
probably not
make you have to go to the bathroom.
That's before a race.
Yeah, you got to have your logistics down for Boston because there's so many moving parts. But when you do finally get to that start line and you get there and you hear that they're about to send off the elites, and then it's time for you to move up, it's just like, wow, we're about to really run the Boston Marathon. We're going to take the journey from Hopkinton all the way to downtown Boston, and it's about to be go time. And it's cool, man. It's so cool. And it was a time out there.
It's not exactly like an easy course.
It is not. It is not. It's definitely a technical course. It's net down here early. So you're going to have your strategy. So the strategy typically, like how we talked about Houston, you know, go out a little bit more conservative. This strategy is like, go out at goal pace or a little fast because you're getting the help from it being net downhill. Yeah. And then once you get past like the first, I think it was like the first 5K or so, then dial it back to you know, your goal pace and hold there. It's going to be rolling until you get to the Newton Hills. Once you got to the Newton Hills, you know, survive. Survive the hills. They definitely was a doozy. And because some of them just felt long, I was like, man, these are long hills to power through. But once you power through those hills, you know, you coast from there. My Boston experience this past year, we had rain. I was like, oh, we're getting the 2018 experience, rain out here. You know, we got to go out here and power through that. So that was fun. And I ended up what ended up happening was, well, I didn't hit my PR in Boston. I had to stop to the porta potty right before Heartbreak Hill. And so that took off 2 minutes from my time, which I was like, it's going to kill my PR. But it is what it is. Let's just make the most of it. Let's see if we can still sub three. Power through Heartbreak and let's finish strong. So that's how I go. But once you make that, it's right on Hereford and then a left on Boston, and you hear the phrase going into Boston, but like when you get downtown, you see the Citco sign. It was raining, so I barely saw the Citco sign. Like I was like 200 meters away. I was like, oh, there's the Citco sign, there we go. So that's, you know, you're a mile out, right? And then you get to downtown, you make that right, it's a little incline, but like I don't know, it just hit me like at that moment. Like I'm going up here for, and like it just hit me. And I got dazed. I was just like, wow, I'm about to finish Boston. And I was like, oh, you gotta snap out of it, man. You gotta at least finish the race. Don't pass out. Cause you know, you're going through the motions right now. So then you make that left and you just see the finish line and just the crowd is there. Even if it was pouring raining, like it was raining, like the crowd's still out there. It was just like, dang, like I just ran the Boston Marathon. Like that just happened.
That's amazing. And to BQ at Boston, not only is like a thing in of itself because of just how hard it is, but I mean, just kind of hear you retell the story, I could just see like how much that race like meant to you. Like visually, I could see that. Most people can only hear it, but visually, just seeing you like recap that and living back through it, it's pretty cool to witness.
Yeah, man. Thanks, man. But yeah, it was a, you know, it's just icing on the cake. It lives up to, you know, the hype that, you know, you train so hard to get to that race. And it was like, wow, it was really like a great experience that I was able to, you know, come experience everything I've been reading about and the stories that people have been telling me about it. So I really enjoyed that. I had never been or witnessed it before going. So everything was just new being out there. Everything was just new to me. And it was just like, oh, I'm just trying to soak it all in.
Yeah. You know, I will say that if, I have friends who ran Berlin and Tokyo, and if Boston ran your pockets, I heard Berlin's gonna do a even more work on your bank account.
Yeah, I know Berlin. I'm waiting to hear back from it. You know, if I end up getting in, you know, gotta find a way to make it happen, you know. But Tokyo isn't as bad. Like, looking at right now, I haven't booked anything yet, which I probably need to book soon. But the flight isn't too bad to get there from here in California, because like a direct flight from LAX to Tokyo. And then the cost, like the other cost, is not, it's not too bad. Like, food cost isn't as expensive as it is over in the US, and the lodging. Fortunately, I have some friends going with me. So we'll have, you know, a nice group to split and then meet up with a lot of different people. That's also, we'll be out there in Tokyo.
I think what I like most about your run journey is that you haven't done really the same race twice. You've done different marathons in different cities. You know, I've done Chevron, which is about to be my fourth time. My first time running an out-of-state marathon was in October. I went to Wisconsin and ran one. And I think I like running like these out-of-state marathons. Or I mean, at least try to do a half out-of-state. But if I'm going to go out-of-state, I kind of want to do a marathon. But
right,
it's a different experience. And I just feel like it's, I don't know, there's something about running a big race like that in a different city that's special, as opposed to, not that Chevron's not special, but you know, it's just different. It's different.
It is different, man. And it's a whole different story. The only race I've ran again was LA. And so I ended up running LA again this year. A friend, you know, was able to help, you know, get me a bib through his company. And then I was pacing him for the race. And then now I'll be doing it a third time because I'm ambassador for the LA Marathon. But other than the LA Marathon, it's all been, you know, different races. And I kind of like that because, you know, it just leaves that story, that chapter for, you know, that moment in time. I mean, eventually I feel like I'm going to redo Chicago. Chicago was absolutely amazing. I was out there to spectate. My girlfriend, she ran it and absolutely crushed it. But it was so good to be on the other side. I was like, oh, I don't have to stress about the race. I'm just out here enjoying it. I'm out here on the streets. So it's pretty cool. But
outside of
for
the
now,
other big races that you, well, not mm-hmm. big, just any other marathons that you want to try your hand at?
Outside of the other big ones?
The majors.
Outside the majors? Yeah, I want to, on my list of marathons is definitely Big Sur for the scenery. I wanted to do CIM this year. So that was going to end up being like the goal race, but it falls directly on my birthday. So one, I didn't want to run a marathon on my birthday. Yeah. So that's why I took it off the list. And then two, I was like, well, since I'm already close to Hawaii is definitely a race I wanted to do as a bucket list race. And so I was like, I'll just do that one since I'm already out here. Outside of that, other marathons I would absolutely love to do. I want to do Eugene. I want to do the Tunnel Marathon.
That's the one I want to try my hand at, mainly because it's downhill. And I'm like, I'll take whatever.
Right. I want to go across the pond again, outside the majors, and do Valencia. I think that one's like, you know, that's a fast one too. Dope one. Since they're doing, most likely Sydney is going to be a world major race, I'm looking forward to doing that one. There's another marathon in South Africa that I would like to do.
Oh wow.
So there's a few. You know, there's a few. I don't think there's, you know, a short list of marathons that, you know, opportunities out there in different cities. And it's always great to see a different city by foot.
Yeah. I mean, your races are way beyond my scope. I was thinking more like Tunnel. I definitely want to try my hand at Revel, like Big Bear.
That's actually coming up in like a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that one's coming up in like 2 weeks.
I want to do that one. I want to try my hand at Grandma's just because I heard so many good things about it.
Yeah, Grandma's. I'm just talking about that one earlier. Yeah, Grandma's on the list. That one's definitely on the list. Wine Glass. A lot of people talk about Wine Glass, so I wouldn't mind.
Is that the one in New York?
Yeah, that one's in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, man. Well, outside of the running, I know you're still linked up with Running Empire, which we had Zach
yep.
a few years ago. How's everything going? How's everything going with all that gear?
Yeah, everything is going great, man. Like, it's so cool to see how, you know, Zach has evolved the Runner's Empire line over the past couple of years. So being with them since, yeah, literally I had just, you know, started with them when we had the interview. So it's so cool. Excuse me. I was just a little raggedy cough still.
It's cool to
see so cool.
With his company.
What's up?
It's cool to see you grow with his company. He had just started it when I had him on. You know, we were talking about his kind of startup in the running fitness apparel, and to mm-hmm. have you like be an ambassador and just have you grow with the company and still be with it. That's awesome. And you know, the loyalty to stick with it. That's cool from his
yeah. End. Yeah. He take care of, you know, as far as ambassadors and the gear is great. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, for me, I'm team. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The gear is great and it stands out. It pops every time you go out and race in and people compliment. So
I like the donut singlet.
Oh yeah, that donut singlet was fresh, man. I was like, oh man, this will go towards the head because this is fun, you know, and it's gonna pop because ain't nobody got this. I like to have some gear that nobody got. Everybody got Nike gear.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody got the, you know, the rabbit or the band and stuff. I'm like, anybody got this donut singlet? Anybody got this piece of singlet out here like this?
I mean, that's true, right? Be the unique one out there.
Exactly.
Doing some stuff with Noon.
Yeah, so with Noon, Noon hit me up. I ended up last year becoming an ambassador for them, but I just had so much going on last year that I wasn't able to really keep up, you know, with the ambassador program. But once I later in the year started getting back to posting on the social media a little bit more, they hit me up about they started a new program called the Noon Creators. And so with the creator program, this is to just create a little bit more content that they can utilize specifically for their page at times. And through that program, they hook us up with the Noon we need for training and stuff. So pretty much like I'm like set on getting my electrolytes in, which is pretty dope. And it's been very helpful. Like I rarely cramp since, you know, regularly intaking, you know, the daily electrolyte hydration. So
yeah. All right. Well, to bring it to a close on part two, and then eventually we'll have to run it back into a part three. Mm-hmm. Just kind of ask some questions here, almost not rapid fire, but you know, just some quick questions, but
hit me.
Favorite ratio of choice?
Right now, the Vaporflies. Vaporfly is the favorite ratio.
Have you tried the threes yet?
I have not tried the threes. I want to possibly get them for Honolulu, but we'll see. If I don't feel like it's going to be a great race, I might just wait to Tokyo and get them. Yeah. But we'll see.
One thing about Vaporflies is, man, they ain't cheap.
They are not. The best way to get them is through the outlet store. So get like, if you can get the previous version through the outlet store, typically at least half off.
Oh yeah. I got the twos and I think I like the twos better than the threes, at least the upper.
Yeah. I heard the upper on the threes is not the best out of all the uppers on the versions one and two.
Yeah.
But they still say it's, you know, a fast shoe. I think it has more pop than the twos. So.
All right. And then what do you like running better, halves or fulls?
I got to go with fulls just because, you know, fulls have been kind to me. Well, not kind, but it's just been my jam. Halves, you know, they're fun, but most of the time I'm running halves in preparation for a full. Yeah. Like it's only been maybe two, three halves that I've like raced all out, but all my other halves have been in preparation for a full. So I'm going to go with full on that one.
How about 5Ks versus fulls?
Oh God.
5Ks, it's all about like Dang. Gas on the pedal.
It is.
Brakes.
It is. I, you know, 5Ks are just long enough to where you end the pain cave, but it's over.
Yeah.
If you go to the 10K, it's too long. And it's just like, why am I still running at this intensity when you get to like mile 4 or 5?
I tell people, I was like, you know what? I think I like running marathons better than I like running a 5K.
Oh, I'll sign up for a marathon any day over a 10K, any day of the week.
And then gels or goos? Gels or goos or blocks?
I do the gels. So I do the Maritain gels. If I could, I'll do the drink mix. You know, if I ever one day can get a elite bottle on the table, I'll take that. But the gels work for me. The goo just never really gave me what my system needed to keep going.
Yeah. And then last one, not so much a rapid fire question, but when you go to these out of state races, what's your regimen? Mm-hmm. Are you flying up like day before, 2 days before?
Yeah, I try to get there a couple of days early. If it's a time difference, then, you know, if I can get there 72 hours early, 48 hours at the latest, just to get acclimated to that time change and, you know, get all the things out the way as far as getting to the expo, getting my bib, making sure logistically how, you know, things will work that morning. So when it comes to the day before the race, like I'm shutting things down at like 3-4 o'clock. Like, if you don't see me by 3-4 o'clock, if you ain't got dinner plans with me, you're not seeing me until after the race or that morning because I'm shutting down the studio. Yeah, and then, you know, once you get that, try to at least get myself a day to enjoy the city that I'm in. Yeah. Post race. It's a whole trip.
Do you ever try to tour the course before you if you get in there early enough?
I don't really tour the course. I'll do my recon on Find My Marathon. So I'll see the course elevation. I don't want to be surprised with no random hill in a race. So I'll do my course recon. I'll see like, okay, elevation changes here. If there's a lot of turnarounds, some races have a lot of U-turns or a lot of turns here or there. So I'll know the course pretty well, just so I can make sure my pacing plan is according to how this course is built.
And I think what the great thing about YouTube is like a lot of times someone posts the actual course on YouTube. So you can kind of see, you know, what lies ahead.
Yeah, that's the great thing about, you know, social media, that people are reviewing it and, you know, sharing their experience and giving you the game, giving you all the tips to help you win.
All right. So what's your advice for, you know, someone who's been there from the 5-hour marathon to someone who's broken sub-3 numerous times, what's like the biggest takeaway you would give to new runners, you know, trying their hand at like, or, you know, just any runner trying to break through whatever time wall is like getting them? What's that secret to getting past that, breaking through?
I think the secret is keep showing up. I think the best tip would be for sure, you know, really leaning into the polarized training. So taking those easy days easy. Like if you don't have a fitness background or, you know, an endurance background, it's going to take some time to typically build your aerobic base. So to definitely take that time to get used to running for long periods and running slow. it's going to pay off. You just have to really, you know, just take the time and have some patience there. And then when, you know, you have your opportunities to run fast on your workout days, run at good effort, like just depending on what you're working on. Some days there's different levels like to workouts. Some workouts, you don't have to hammer every workout. Some workouts you're, you know, really just working at marathon pace. Some workouts you're working at faster than marathon pace, which would be like threshold or 5K pace, like really higher speeds. So when you really get a plan together that's going to incorporate those different levels to it, especially if you're like, you're building in the marathon, you're working at super easy speeds, then you're working at speeds faster than where you want to run the marathon. Then you have your special workouts when you're running right at marathon pace, so that when you do get to the race, all your training meets in the middle at marathon pace, and then you can hold it, you know, and go out there and execute for 26.2.
Words of wisdom from the man himself. Lastly, drop that Instagram handle so people know where to find you.
Yeah, find me at Instagram, CJ the Runner, You'll see me on there. You'll see the Jerry Curl, all the shenanigans on the page, and say hi for sure. You know, don't be a stranger.
Yeah, I can definitely attest that he's just as cool as in person as he is on these podcasts and on social media. So make sure you give him a follow. CJ, or not CJ the runner, but Corey, appreciate your time. We'll definitely catch back up and run this back for part three. Hopefully not 2 years down the road, but sooner rather than later.
Hey, I'm just glad, you know, you're back behind the podcast, Mike, man. So it's going to be good. Can't wait for this to release.
All right, man. You take it easy.
All right, bro.